This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martalker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Star Trek Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me once again, as he is every week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Now, Matthew, I knew we were going to record this show together because, you know, I once heard this prophecy. It said that two men separated far apart in space and time will gather together to communicate by the ether and talk about the Bajoran people. And here we are. I mean, I don't remember where I heard that, but it was somewhere.
I don't know, Chris. It's a good thing I've been watching a lot of Doctor Who, so I can understand this kind of like time paradoxical speak that you're giving me right now. But I'm glad to be here. And I don't know if it was prophesied by a prophet or just you after too many sake bombs. I'm not sure.
How do you picture that I drink sake?
Just repeatedly.
Okay. Just throwing them back like they're shots.
Yeah, just throwing them back. Yeah. Just, you know, one after the other.
Oh, man. No, so today we're talking about prophecies because we're going to talk about prophecies today, Bajoran prophecies, which was a very interesting element of Deep Space Nine. And I thought it would be interesting, Matthew, to pull them out the way that we did with the orbs earlier on this show, because there are a handful of prophecies that actually do get a lot of play on Deep Space Nine, but they're scattered across seven seasons of the show. And so they're really these tiny things that are sprinkled here and there that you may not really connect or pay that much attention to, except in just a couple of episodes where they really come to the forefront, like Destiny, Rapture, or The Reckoning, or What You Leave Behind.
Chris, I'm not sure how you forgot, you know, Ferengi love songs having the most important prophecy to date for the Bajorans. It's revolutionary.
It really is. And I didn't forget about it, because before we get into the serious stuff, I wanted to ask you if you have, you know, taken a note from Rom and used this prophecy, which is Horan's seventh prophecy, you know, on a date before.
You know, honestly, it says that he will come to the palace bearing no malice, carrying a chalice filled with sweet spring wine. Honestly, I find that if I bring a woman a glass of a sweet spring wine, you know, supplied by me, of course, with my BajoranSpringWine.com website, I find that she is much more agreeable. You know, women do love spring wine. It's sweet, light, airy. It tastes delicious with just about anything, maybe a little Hasperat, or a nice steak, or, you know, maybe she's vegan, you know, so she wants something along those lines. It doesn't matter. Spring wine goes, wait, I'm sorry. I'm going into my spiel about spring wine.
Well, you know, I was thinking that Horan was probably not so much a prophet as a Bajoran songwriter who just wrote really bad lyrics.
Yes, really bad rhyming poetry. No, I thought that this is kind of funny. It made me wonder, you know, if this is a romantic prophecy in some ways or something like that. And so, and unclear exactly why Rom is referring to this in the episode, other than the fact that it's probably the one that stuck in his head because it rhymes. and he's been studying prophecies before him and Lita get married. And this just happens to be his favorite, I'm sure, again, because it's Rom and it rhymes.
So you're saying that Rom likes things that rhyme?
I think he does. Maybe it's just easier for him to remember it's Rom. I mean,
that might be it. All right. Well, let's jump into the serious ones here. And I've broken these down roughly by when they appear during the series, but I've also grouped them by the prophet himself. So the first one is Trakor. And the first one we'll talk about is Trakor's third prophecy, which is the one that we see in Destiny. And it's actually one of the most well-fleshed out prophecies on Deep Space Nine in terms of details that we get and how we get to see it play out on the screen. It's also an important turning point for Sisko, because I feel like this is the one where he finally starts actually thinking that there's something to these prophecies.
Yeah, Chris, just watching the episode again, it is really interesting because at the beginning of the episode and throughout the episode, Sisko is very much opposed to the idea of being a religious icon. On his side, he is kind of coming to terms with this still. On the other side, it was very interesting because this whole episode is about Kira coming to terms with who she believes Sisko to be and being okay with the fact that she considers him to be a religious icon to herself specifically, not just to her people. And, I liked that halfway through the episode, you get Sisko sitting in his office and Dax comes in. And she says, "Don't tell me you're studying Bajoran prophecies about the emissary." And the fact that, Sisko is willing to sit down and read these prophecies and study them and think through them was, I think, a huge turning point for his character, because as he sees this prophecy start to come true halfway through the episode, I think he's starting to learn how to put more stock in it. And plus, I really like the way that Kira argues this to him in the first place. She says, "Look, the prophets are beings that exist out of space and time. Why could they not have given a prophecy to a Bajoran man named Trakor? He wrote it down and now it's becoming true because they've already seen it." And it's a great argument. And it's obviously a very Christian argument for why God's prophecies come true in Scripture, because God knows, because he's already been there, because he's outside of space and time. So it makes logical sense there, and it also makes logical sense to Sisko, and I think this is a great episode. You wouldn't really think, that this would have a lot of impact, but subtly, the writing, I think, throughout this really brings you to an end and kind of changes some characters.
Yeah. It's a surprisingly important episode. I say surprisingly because I feel like just average Star Trek fans anyway, now diehard Niners, maybe they latch on, "Oh, Destiny, yes, that was a very important episode." But a lot of Niners may not think about it either. It's just that episode that's there in the middle, literally in the middle of the third season, about a comet and Cardassian scientists. And you don't always think about how important it was as a turning point, as you say, both for Sisko and for Kira. Let me ask you this, though. Before I ask you the question, let me read the prophecy or an excerpt from the prophecy. "When the river wakes, stirred once more to Janir's side, three vipers will return to their nest in the sky. When the vipers try to peer through the temple gates, a sword of stars will appear in the heavens. The temple will burn, and its gates shall be cast open." So you just mentioned that, of course, the prophets, being nonlinear, they've already seen it, so they can give the prophecy to Trakor in the past. But my question is, why not just tell him what's going to happen? Now, is it because the concept of spaceships and the wormhole and all would be really strange to Trakor, and so they couch it in in words that will make sense to him? Or is there another reason? Because for me, you know, you mentioned Christian prophecies. This particular one reminds me more of Nostradamus than it does of biblical prophecy.
Well, Chris, I think that one, you hit it on the head. You're talking about, you know, the understanding of the Bajorans at the time. So this makes much more sense to them. I think when it comes to prophecy and the idea of whether or not you give exactly what's going to happen or not, it makes me think of in the book of Daniel in the Bible, where Daniel gets these visions of what's going to happen. And there aren't any names, but it's very clear that what's being talked about is Greece and Persia and the different kingdoms that are going to happen and all the upheaval that happens after the Persian Empire falls to Alexander the Great. And then, of course, Alexander the Great's death is foretold there and the breakup of his empire and all of these things happening. Now, there aren't any names, but what's clear from what's happening there, we know that's what's being talked about. And you know, before that, trying to figure it out was difficult. Who are we talking about here? In the same way here, you know, and especially in the episode, you know, you can read it a few different ways until it happens, and then it all makes sense. You know, prophecy, no matter where it comes from, is never just about foretelling the future. It's also about, I think, the belief of the person who believes in the prophecy, but also it's too, I think, about the validation of the person giving the prophecy in the end, and whether or not they're trustworthy. And the prophets give these prophecies, and by them coming true, prove their trustworthiness to the Bajoran people. And so this one coming true, as we already talked about, has that exact effect on our characters, Benjamin Sisko and Kira. And I think that that's a really interesting thing. And of course, the Vedic, who comes to warn them, is all worried. He actually is impacted as well by this. And of course, I think even the Bajoran Council then would have been, the Vedic Assembly would have been affected by the way this prophecy comes to light. And so, it has its intended effect, you know, and I think that's a very, again, really interesting thing for Star Trek to be talking about, is the idea of prophecy and spirituality and faith and all of these things. And again, it's not ramming it down your throat. It's just showing you the rigors of being somebody of faith, but at the same time, the rewards that can come from being somebody of faith.
So how do you feel about this particular one? Do you believe after ever, because again, it is about Sisko coming to believe, oh, maybe this is what they were foretelling and it's true. And so all this talk about emissary is true. And Kira seeing that, okay, yes, Sisko is the emissary. He is a religious figure. Do you see this as actually being a case of the prophets having told Trakor what was going to happen in the future, him writing it in words that made sense to him, and then it really happens? By which I mean, this is really the specific event that the prophets told Trakor about, or is it just coincidence? And it's always easy to make events fit a prophecy. That's why people believe in Nostradamus, because Nostradamus is writing nonsense and it's very, very vague. Mm-hmm. And of course, the way our brains work, it's easy for us after something happens to put the pieces together and say that's what he was talking about.
Right. I think the difference between Nostradamus is that he's human being. And the big difference here is that we have nonlinear prophets. So I would say yes to your question that this is the fulfillment of the prophecy, because of that fact. It makes much more sense. It's easier to stomach than just some guy writing nonsense that's only a human being.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on to Trakor's fourth prophecy, which states that the emissary will face a fiery trial and he will be forced to choose. So this, of course, is foretelling what happens ultimately, I believe, at the end of Deep Space Nine in the fire caves with Sisko and Gul Dukat. When, if you can remember, I know it's kind of hard to remember, but when you first encountered this prophecy, and of course knowing, you know, that now Sisko is believing that he's the emissary, we're moving forward, did you think this was foretelling anything in particular from a character standpoint?
You know, Chris, I think probably the first time I saw this episode and watched it when it played on television, I probably didn't think much of it, right. Other than the fiery trial. Okay, I've seen this in biblical terms before, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego kind of thing going on. Forced to choose, who, maybe choose between which character will live, but not anything that comes down to what we see in the end of the series. I think, again, you know, whether the Deep Space Nine writers knew exactly what they were going to do at the end of the show,
right,
or they were leaving themselves open. But I mean, obviously, this is, they only give us this part of the prophecy and then it gets cut off by the end of the episode. But well done for them, you know, either to just remember what they had written when they get back to where they are and, yeah, and at the end of the show, or they kind of have been thinking a little bit along these lines and it just gets further fleshed out as they get farther along, which I'm sure is probably more the case.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I mean, the DS9 writers were famous for throwing things into episodes that they could pick up on later on, but they might not. And this one, I feel, is vague enough, excellently vague. Is that a good term? Excellently vague. The emissary will face a fiery trial and he will be forced to choose. And really, if we just, emissary is Sisko. Sisko faced a number of fiery trials. I mean, there was, of course, the battle with Dukat in the fire caves. But, you know, he also left. He went back to New Orleans. You know, he didn't know where he was going to go with his career at one point. He was torn between being the emissary and being a Starfleet captain. There were many, many situations where I think Sisko was torn. And the war itself is a fiery trial for him, because really the future of the entire Alpha Quadrant was on Sisko's shoulders. So this was a very vague thing that came true in a number of ways, I think. But it was a nice way for them to drop a thread in that they could pick up on later if they wanted to, that perfectly fit within the story that it appeared and within the context of Bajor and the prophets in the first place.
Yeah, I think that works well, and I think it's smart of the writers, you know, just throw things out there, and, you know, if you never remember it again, it doesn't really matter. It could be one of those things that you never have to pick up on again, but I love that they actually do go in and pick it up. I think it's great, and they really do make it mean something in the end, and so it just goes to show the idea of what it means to be a good writer, and that you know what to remember, what you've written, and what to forget, and what to pick up, and what to let go, and you know whether it's a bit of felicity that they remember it or not, I'm not sure, but yeah, I think you're right. They left themselves a door open with being sufficiently vague with this prophecy, and yet they do a great job of making it seem very clear by the end.
Are you sure they don't have a room called the thread room? And every time they do this, they tape a thread to the ceiling and it hangs down, and then they put a piece of paper on the end of the thread and they write down what they left open.
There is a good case of that. Or it could be one of those things, you know, every time you see one of those movies where somebody's trying to figure out a conspiracy theory and they have all these pictures taped up to the wall and all of these threads connecting them.
Errors going all over the place.
Deep Space Nine room looked like, But yeah, so by the end, you ended up with a spider web. That's probably what it was.
All right. Well, let's move on. Now, one reason we talked about Destiny being a big turning point for Cisco is because when we get to Rapture in the fifth season, it's important that Cisco is all in with the idea of being the emissary and that he believes that the prophecies can be true at this point. Because what happens to him in Rapture, and tell me what you think here, Matthew. Again, the prophets are these beings and they can influence, and Cisco is half prophet in the first place, which when you retcon it, going from what we find out at the end of the series, and you look back at him and you just know, okay, he was half prophet all along. So he maybe has a predisposition to believe in this stuff in the first place because the prophets need him to. Then you read it differently. When you go through the series the very first time and you don't know that, then, and the writers, of course, I think didn't really know at this point that Cisco was going to be half prophet. It's a bit different. So it's important that he buys into this, and that's what Destiny did for him and what Trakor's third prophecy did for him. Then you get to Zakol's third prophecy in Rapture, and that's how Cisco finds Bahala, and that's what really cements for everybody, including our beloved Kai Winn, that Cisco's for real. I mean, he's actually the emissary.
Well, and not only do you get Zakol's third prophecy, but then you get the fact that Cisco himself prophesies.
Right.
And that comes true as well. And, I mean, the whole episode really cementing that there is something very special about Cisco. There is something very special about these prophets, and their prophecies are not, just a bunch of nonsense words. These are very, very important things. And, you know, Rapture was, I think, the pivotal turning point for the series. The show completely changes. One, as we've noted before, I think, it is the first episode where the Deep Space Nine characters get the first contact uniforms, which I always think mm-hmm. of as the Deep Space Nine uniforms.
Yeah.
But two, it's also the episode where they dive head into where they're going to go for the end of the series. That Cisco and the prophets and this war and who Cisco is, which is the fact that he's going to be part God, basically, by the end. It all gets set up in this episode. And one, it's a fantastic piece of writing. Two, though, I think it does cement, really, if you had any doubt whether or not the prophets could be trusted in their prophecies and in relation to all of these kind of things, it's really well settled in this episode.
Because he finds Bahala in just a few days with this vision, and archaeologists had been searching for 10,000 years to find the city, and they couldn't. And so it really makes you start believing, right, that, okay, this is true, because how on earth could he possibly find this if he weren't being guided by the prophets?
Well, and you know, it's funny, Chris. I remember this episode thinking, how did nobody else think of this before? The reflection and the waterfall on the other side.
Well, I think the key...
How does nobody think about that before?
Well, I think the key is in the prophecy itself, which says that only someone touched by the prophets can find the lost city of Bahala. Yeah. And if you think about someone like Wynn, who, I mean, she's the Kai, and she thinks she's touched by the prophets, but I think she isn't.
Oh, you know, she's touched all right, just she's a totally different way.
Yeah. That's for another show, but wait till we do our Kai Winn show. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. So, but I think when it says someone touched by the prophets, it's not just like you have some spiritual connection, like Kira has a spiritual connection to the prophets. Not like that. It's much more like we've talked about before how Cisco is like Moses. Right. He's like an apostle. And I think it's in that sense. It has to have that level of connection to the prophets. And so not just anybody, even if they had thought about that, as you said, they still may not have found the city because they didn't have the final key.
Well, and to the finding of Valhalla and what it does to legitimize who Sisko is for the Bajoran people, then as well makes his prophecy all the more palatable to them and helps them, you know, accept his prophecy and follow his advice, keeping them out of the Federation at that point and signing a non-aggression pact with the Dominion, keeping them out of the war, which saves Bajor from being drawn into this horrible war that will happen, and which is also great, not destroying their planet, because obviously Bajor would have been overrun at that point when Deep Space Nine was taken. If they had been part of the Federation, that whole battle to reclaim Bajor would have been much more costly than it was with it just being the station itself. So, I mean, goodness, what happens in this episode is just, again, so pivotal.
Yeah. And what Sisko's prophecy was, which we call the Emissary's prophecy, was, "But then a shadow blocked out the sun. We looked up and saw a cloud filling the sky. It was a swarm of locusts, billions of them. They hovered over the city. The noise was deafening, but just as quickly as they came, they moved on." And ultimately, it appears to be a reference to the Dominion fleet by Inferno's Light. Okay, so let's move on to the sixth season and the episode The Reckoning, which is an episode we've talked a bit about as part of other discussions on here before. And this brings us to the prophet Shabrin. This is Shabrin's fifth prophecy, which essentially just says that Bajor will be reborn, but it talks about this epic battle between a prophet and Khost Amajan, who is a Pa Wraith. And of course, we see the face-off, you know, where we have Kira, we have Jake, and they're possessed. But this talks about how there will be 1,000 years of peace. And it really has very strong biblical overtones to me. And Matthew, I think you can most certainly speak to the parallels much better than I can on that.
Yeah, it's it definitely kind of speaks that idea of when the end of the tribulation, where there's the final battle at Armageddon, and there's the 1,000-year millennial reign by Christ, and those things very much in that vein. I think what's interesting here is that, one, this prophecy doesn't actually get fulfilled because Kai Wynn ruins the battle. And then, two, the fire caves now hold the Pa Wraiths forever, according to the prophecy, because of what the Emissary did. So that means the reckoning will never happen, at least fully, and unless somehow they're released. So one of the prophecies would have to be broken for the reckoning to happen fully again. So it's interesting. Does this prophecy get fulfilled? Does it have to get fulfilled? Will it get fulfilled really far down in the future? It's a very strange thing. I think it's one of those things where the Deep Space Nine writers messed up a little bit. They didn't think that one completely through, to have Sisko kind of, you know, trap the Pa Wraiths forever in the fire caves, when one of them would have to fight a prophet in this reckoning for this prophecy to actually come true.
Right. Yeah. So it also reminds me a little bit of, like you said, it didn't come true here. Will it come true in the future? And you think forward, and it reminds me of the end of the world prophecies mm-hmm. that we have today, where, you know, every few years there's someone who says that this and this and this are signifying that the end of the world is going to happen. And then, of course, right. It never comes to pass. And I mean, we know the world will eventually end one day, but whether it ends in the stories from the Bible or whether it ends just through natural destruction of the sun dying, we don't know what's going to happen. At least, you know, everyone has their own beliefs of what's going to happen. But this also is sort of, it reminds me of that a little bit.
Yeah, and it's it was interesting, and it was a great, again, a great episode too, and another pivotal turning point for Sisko and his belief, really driving home what he had learned in Rapture, his willingness to sacrifice Jake and his belief in the prophets there. Again, a really well done, really well written episode.
Well, that signifies the progression, right? Because Destiny was season 3, 15th episode. Mm-hmm. Rapture was 5th season, 10th episode. And then right. The Reckoning is 6th season, 21st episode. So if you see the progression of Sisko, and yes. You see at that point, like you mentioned with Jake, I mean, at that point, Sisko, whereas at the beginning, he didn't like the idea of being the emissary in the first place, he slowly had to come to believe in these prophecies and in the prophets. And then at this point, in the 6th season, towards the end of the 6th season, he's actually willing to let his son die.
Right.
Because he believes so strongly in this.
Yeah, it is a really, I think, a really cool literary story, basically. You know, this building out of a character, really seeing him grow, and probably, again, and as we've talked about, just one of the most well-rounded characters by the end of this show that you get in Star Trek, just because of the way you watch him progress from emissary to what you leave behind.
And what you leave behind leads us to the last prophecy that we're going to talk about, which is from Talnut, and this is Talnut's prophecy of the final days. And this ultimately plays out in the end of What You Leave Behind, the fire caves, and the battle between Dukat and Sisko, which we've been talking about here and there. And Kai Winn, and when Gul Dukat comes as Angel Tanine, and, you know, disguised as a Bajoran, which really leads Kai Winn to misinterpret prophecy, and she falls for what Dukat is doing. One question, okay, so Dukat definitely, he wants to use the pod wraiths for his own purposes and destroy Bajor. Do you feel that, and we'll talk about this more in another episode, but do you feel that Winn also was seeking the pod wraiths at any point, or she was just tricked into that by Dukat?
You know, at that point, I do think that she chooses the pod wraiths over the prophets for a while. I think by the end, you know, she at least kind of recants, maybe. Really seeing the error of her ways at the very, 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 very end. Kind of that Darth Vader-ish, I'm going to throw the Emperor down and then I'll die in the end kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, because she does try to destroy the book. Because she comes face to face with just how evil this is. That she's been playing with the devil, and now she realizes just how bad it is. But I think she at that point just starts going with whatever she thinks is going to give her power, and she doesn't care whether it's the pod wraiths or the prophets, or hell, it could be Klingon gods. She wouldn't care.
Yeah, because she's all about power in the end. So, well, the prophecy itself says, "And the land shall be poisoned by a great evil. The poison must be purged away, so the land can be reborn." And it'd be easy to read this as the great evil being Dukat, who has come back to finish the job that he started, which goes back to Waltz, where he decides that he's going to destroy the Bajorans. But I also read it a bit as the great evil being Kai Winn herself.
Mm-hmm. The great evil, I think it's actually a combination of all three, Kai Winn, Dukat, and the pod wraiths. You know, if they win, it's more than just evil. You know, they would be controlling then the Celestial Temple and all that goes along with that, you know, and who knows what havoc they might start wrecking on the universe. And so This is a serious thing, and definitely a prophecy. I think we're glad comes true, in the sense that it comes true through Sisko defeating this great evil, and so that the land can be reborn.
So all these prophecies come together to make DS9 very unique. I can only imagine what, of course, Admiral Ross and everyone else at Starfleet Command is thinking as they're looking over at their captain, Benjamin Sisko, who turns out to be half prophet, half wormhole alien, who is playing a pivotal role in the course of an entire civilization, the Bajorans. And you talk about violating the Prime Directive. I don't know, Sisko, is this the ultimate violation of the Prime Directive?
You know, can it really be a violation of the Prime Directive if you're part prophet, though?
Well, and, you know, the Bajorans, they, by all the different definitions of qualifying or not qualifying for intervention, of course, they're fine, but just thinking about how a Starfleet officer is influencing another civilization, the influence that Sisko has over the course of Bajor is incredible. So I'm glad we got to talk about the prophecies, because it has been an element of DS9 that I've always found fascinating. I know it's a sore spot for a lot of Star Trek fans. It's probably not so much a sore spot for most of those who listen to this show, although it'll be interesting to find out if it is. But the prophecies on Bajor are not the only thing that we've been talking about on the network this week. So here are some other things that you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Time travel and alternate realities.
And then you have everybody else on the Defiant that we, you know, obviously don't know very well, but they all have somebody that's going to be affected. And then you think, too, oh, goodness, the whole entire Dominion War would have been affected if they hadn't gone back.
Earl Grey.
Episodes we love to defend.
In the observation lounge, and he accidentally calls him number one, and then they look at each other like, is he going to figure it out? And I'm thinking, what do the Ferengi know? They don't know anything. They're not like, wait, let me look that up. Wait, that means something that Captain Picard calls his first. No, they don't know that.
The Ready Room.
Relics.
In the day, I asked Ron about it, and he said, we just screwed up. I screwed up. Producer screwed up. Mike and Rick, and it wouldn't be Andre then. It would have been Nerain as the science advisor. It's like nobody caught it.
To the journey!
5-episode marathon.
Yeah, with Aisha Tyler and Jeri Ryan, she talked about how when she signed up and actually signed the contract to become 7 of 9, she'd never seen the show before, but she watched an episode of Star Trek Voyager as she went home that night and was aired, but apparently it was like the worst episode ever. She literally cried that night because she's like, what on earth did I do?
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Ronald D. Moore recap.
So you're saying that you wish Star Trek was BSG?
No.
Say for the record that you wish Star Trek had never existed and that Battlestar Galactica was the thing instead.
Warp 5.
Enterprise Season 1 Blu-rays.
Towards the end of that particular documentary, Brannon expresses that he had been also feeling quite dejected and burnt out at the end of the first season, which makes me wonder, did he really have the energy? Was it kind of only just hanging in there?
Trek News and Views.
Halloween Treks.
Played the murdering crazy person who has psychic visions and can communicate with the ghosts.
It was kind of a similar character to the one on Voyager, right?
No.
No? Okay.
Literary Treks.
Demons of Erin Darkness.
Well, what's interesting about it is that, you know, Kira, you know, her gods haven't cast her out. You know, her people have. And it's a lot the same way of, you know, Luther and his 95 Theses and being kicked out of the Catholic Church and all of that happening. Because what Kira has brought to her people is kind of a reformation.
And introducing our TOS show, Standard Orbit.
James Tiberius Kirk.
Now, Star Trek 4, I mean, aside from the bookend stuff, I don't really know how much Kirk grows there. It's kind of a standalone story in a lot of ways.
He learns about whales and how it's bad to hunt any animal to extinction.
Which I guess is an important lesson to learn.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows for you, and you'll find them in many places, including iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. You can download or stream from the website, and you can find links to everything by visiting trek.fm/pd for podcast directory. Now, Matthew, I just mentioned that I don't think it's a sore spot for people who listen to The Orb, for Niners. But it'll be interesting to find out what people think about the prophecies and also about the deep interweaving of religion into the series. And if you want to share your thoughts on that, you can send us a message by going to trek.fm/contact, and you'll find a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose The Orb, and that will come to Matthew and me by email. We'd also love to hear your voice and hear your thoughts about this, and you can do that by sending us a voicemail. Just go to the website, click the tab, and you can use your webcam's microphone to record a message and upload it to us as an MP3 file. We also have forums where you can talk about this topic with us and other listeners. Just go to trek.fm/forums for that. And in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and you'll always find us tweeting away about Star Trek on Twitter under username trekfm. Now, Matthew, when you're not, you know, looking up romantic Bajoran prophecies that you can use next time you go to the pub or the bar, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me tweeting wonderful Bajoran love prophecies from MattRushing02. Of course, lots of other things, so that's a great place to get in touch with me. Also, we do literary treks where we talk books and comics, and we've been going through the Deep Space Nine relaunch, which we just talked about this last week, and talked about Horn and Ivory, which was great in the Deep Space Nine relaunch, and talking about some very interesting goings on with Kira. So that's a great place if you're enjoying the Deep Space Nine talk you're getting here on The Orb. Now, Chris, you know, when you're not poring over Bajoran prophecies, kicking back with a nice glass of my spring wine from springwine.com direct, where can we find you?
Well, I'm usually hanging out with the Vipers. You know, those Cardassians, they're a lot of fun. So we fly around, we look for comets, and you just try to make people's dreams come true, and their prophecies as well. When I'm done with that, I like to relax on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as at my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And elsewhere on the network, besides doing literary treks with you, Matthew, you can find me on The Ready Room, where I'm joined by hosts from all around the network, as well as special guests, as we talk about all 5 live-action Star Trek series and Star Trek news. And you'll also find me with Kate Walsh on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise, very much in the same way we talk about Deep Space Nine here on The Orb. Although, I don't think we have any prophecies to talk about on Enterprise, Matthew.
I don't think so, Chris, unless there were some prophecies about the Zindi attack, which I don't think there are.
I don't think so. I think Porthos has his cheese prophecies, but, you know, that's for another time.
They're hard to understand, though.
So if you'd like to support Trek FM and help us bring The Orb to you every week, we have a great way for you to do that. If you go over to trek.fm/donate, you'll find 8 original alien illustrations. Those are done by Tobu Ushi, who is a great artist and does most of the artwork that you see on our website. And we have those available in 2 forms. There are badges and there are art prints, and you can mix and match, choose which ones you want in which format. There are also different contribution levels for you to choose from. So choose what's right for you, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you each week. So we really appreciate your support of Trek FM.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb. Thank you.
Recording
the Prophet's fancy pants. They have really fancy pants.
They have very, very fancy pants.
Yeah. They're old, too. Talk about old pants.
But style-wise, you can never really tell because stylistically, they come from so many different eras of fashion because it's non-linear.
Whew, man, they make Bing... I mean, they make... they make... what's his name? Good night.
Mr. Green Jeans.
Okay, yeah. They make Bill Cosby's...
Oh.
sweaters look like, you know, just nothing. I mean, talk about crazy. Talk about Joseph's Technicolor Dreamcoat.
That's right. The Prophet's in their Technicolor nonlinear pants.
Exactly. Technicolor nonlinear pants. I love it.